We present The Sound of Football.
Hull are now absolutely certainly going down mathematically. Do you know what? It's really stupid as a West Ham fan, but I actually feel properly relieved now. And that whole thing about...
You were expecting the 17-0 win, weren't you?
Oh, no, it's just really kind of irrational, but I just thought, knowing West Ham, something's going to happen. Like, they're going to get deducted a point or something from some kind of dodgy dealing or, you know, just for out of spite for having two... numbskulls like Golden Sullivan and Giles or something, but
it wasn't enough that Hull were like beaten and bleeding on the floor. You had to wait until their last breath
until they had the final kick in the stomach.
They're finally dead.
And it's a very warm welcome to episode 38 of The Sound of Football. My name is Chris Oakley, as if you hadn't already guessed from the previous 37 weeks. And, well, if it's week 38, then it can only mean one thing, and that is that the Premier League season has finished. And I'm very pleased to say that I'm joined this week by Graham Sibley once again. And it's a rip-roaring return to Terry DeFellin, who's back feeling much better, I am led to understand. Is that correct, Terry?
Yes, I am back from the dead.
Chris. Splendid. Back. A full compliment once again. So, yes, the Premier League season is finally over. And as we predicted back in week 5, Chelsea are the champions. They veritably crawled over the line there against Wigan at the weekend. A small matter of an 8-0 victory over Wigan, which is probably about the most emphatic clinching of a title I think I've ever seen. Puts that Arsenal against Liverpool matter in 1989 in the last game sort of knocks it into a cocked hat, I think. But anyway, let's just quickly rake over the coals of that. We'll come to you, Terry, as soon as you're making up for lost time. Did you see the final match for Chelsea there? And just champions, would you say, justified in winning the title? Or are you still kind of harbouring some kind of... feelings that maybe Man U were the better team at all?
No, I always thought that Chelsea were the better team. Hmm. The league table has borne that out. I think that they had more depth to their squad. It's a hoary chestnut, but Manchester United did lose Cristiano Ronaldo and Carlos Tevez, and they are difficult players to replace. Hmm. And I thought Manchester United were fantastic this season, given the players that they lost, but... not fantastic enough to overhaul a very balanced and experienced Chelsea team with a very, very good manager. I thought that the game was, a bit of a disappointment from a neutral point of view because it was a complete procession.
I was just going to use exactly that word, Terry, yes,
having
procession.
Having watched the Spanish Grand Prix only a few hours beforehand, which was just sort of like, I know anyone who doesn't like Formula 1 will go, well, it's like this anyway, but it was sort of like this really dull sort of like, one car after another, no overtaking, no genuine, excitement whatsoever. And then, I'm thinking, well, hopefully the Premier League title race will yield more excitement. And, I should have known better, frankly. Well, Wigan are, they're very, very handy at home, but they'll just bend over to anyone better than them away from home. Their away form is rubbish, particularly I think against the top sides. And to lose 8-0, though, goodness me, and 9-1 at Tottenham. And 8-0 at Chelsea. That's bad form. That is, they obviously don't like coming down to London, do they?
Cool, dear me. I know that basically Chelsea needed that early goal to settle them down and then they were kind of off and running. But I think I put a comment on Twitter during the afternoon when that game was on that I was quite prepared to put a bet on them scoring about 12. And I wasn't even joking. I just thought it was that much one-way traffic. Graham... aside from the whole thing of Chelsea kind of clinching the title, of course, we had all that sideshow with Didier Drogba going on as well.
Oh, God.
Are you one of the majority, of which I include myself, that thinks he's basically a bit of a git?
I think you could say that about most professional footballers, couldn't you?
but he was being exceptionally gittish, if you don't mind my saying.
I think perhaps he was just drawing attention away from people like Ashley Cole and John Terry, maybe. Yes, fine. I mean, I have to admit, I haven't seen any of it. So, but I've heard plenty enough about it, and everyone's going on about what a twat he is. But I mean, like, I don't think anyone's really thought. My word, I thought Didier Drogba was one of the finest, most upstanding professionals in the game. But my head's really turned around now. You know?
Yeah, I mean, we had this kind of, I think we had this brief conversation last week about my friend of mine a few years back, who we was having a discussion about who was the player of the year, and I was trying to defend Drogba on the basis that he's an outstanding attacker, and by God, he is as well. I mean, there's no getting away from that fact. He's ended up as top goal scorer this year, etc., etc., etc. But there's no defending really this awful temperamental attitude that he has, and now we can. If we couldn't before, we can now add the words immature and God knows what else. There. I mean, this whole thing of, oh, I wanted to take the penalty. I wanted to get my golden boot. Just, I mean, you know, that phrase of there's no I in team, but there's three in immature little git. I mean, oh, just terrible. And you know, I for one wasn't kind of convinced when they kind of came out. In the second half, supposedly having had a good talking amongst themselves, and he was kind of, oh, I'm celebrating with the team. I just thought, oh, God. It was just awful. Just never before have I wanted to punch him more. And I'm not a violent person, but I'll make an exception of him. There we go. I'll get off my soapbox now.
Didier Drogba is the kind of guy who, if a long-lost family member came to the house, and everyone was fussing over this long-lost family member. Didier Drogba is the kind of person who would feign illness in order to gain attention back on himself.
Yeah.
He's that kind of guy. But you know what I mean.
Oh.
He's a really sort of, you know, he wants to try and make it all about himself, doesn't he, Didier? And I understand he's a fine man off the pitch. I mean, a philanthropist and full of good works. But you know that you know the football tends to turn people into gits, and it's easy to judge them on that basis. But I mean, I thought it was just a measure of just how dull the proceedings were that Martin, I think it was Martin Tyler, and I think it was Andy Gray. I genuinely can't remember.
I think it was, yeah.
The commentators just went on about it continuously, you know, for much of the first half, and I thought, well, there really isn't anything else exciting to going on, so you may as well just talk about that. I mean, as finales go to an end of the season, I thought it kind of sums up the way the Premier League is at the moment.
Terry, let me get this straight. You're actually accusing Sky commentators of blowing something out of proportion just to make the game a little bit more interesting.
I am, Graham. I know that sounds shocking. I know you find that very difficult to accept.
I mean,
you'll forgive me for saying this, Terry, but I don't think you've thought it through properly.
Do you think so?
Well,
it wouldn't be the first time, Chris.
Do you know what, Chris? I mean, I think it's this sort of mindless sort of armchair punditry that is really destroying podcasts. It really is. It's a sort of thing that no one wants to hear it. No one wants to hear it. I mean, like the good people at the pub who dutifully download their podcasts, and you know, they just don't want to hear people like that, you know, slagging off fine broadcasters like that, do they?
Stan Collymore walked in the room then for a minute. but that would be
a deeply unpleasant thought if Stan Collymore suddenly walked into the room.
Our old friend Stanley. It was actually quite interesting when you watch the Match of the Day highlights. Whoever the kind of faceless renter commentator that they sent down to commentate that. He barely mentioned all this hoo-ha about Drogba. It was just like, oh, he looks a bit upset. And that was about it. That was the only reference, whereas kind of Sky decided to kind of blow it up out of all proportion. But it did kind of, it has to be said, Didier Drogba. I noticed at the end when all the medals and the trophy had been handed out and all the rest of it, and they had the traditional team photo, they put the board in front of the team and it says Chelsea champions 2009-2010. Didier Drogba even then had to lie down in front of it and decided he wasn't going to stand together with his teammates. He had to kind of be separate. And I just thought, God, we don't think much of ourselves, do we, eh? But, let's put him aside for the time being. It is, as we said, a tremendous achievement for Chelsea. They've finished with 103 goals. And it's not often that teams in the top flight score more than 100. I think the last team to do that was Tottenham in 61 or 62, something like that.
I believe so.
Back in the days when that was a regular occurrence. And I think they got about 115 that year, I think I read earlier on. But anyway...
Jimmy Greaves got about 85 of them.
He probably did. And that was just the first game of the season. It's a tremendous achievement for Chelsea, and the old blue and white ribbons are back on the cup again. And what are the chase about? I mean,
but Chris, you know the celebrations were fine, but you know they were a bit low key when you compare them to the celebrations from last Wednesday, weren't they?
Hey, I don't know to what you might be referring.
Well, you know, the most celebrated victory, you know, title. There must have been a cup handed out from the way that the crowd and the players were celebrating after that game anyway.
Which game are you referring to, Graham?
Tottenham Man City, obviously.
Oh, right, yeah, of course. Yeah, the grand final of the Premier League. Oh, hang on, no, that was just the playoff for fourth place, wasn't it? In fact, it wasn't even a playoff, was it? No, there must have been a trophy handed out there.
Well, as good as. Yeah.
There must have been a trophy. I mean, why were they celebrating like they were, otherwise without a trophy? I mean, it doesn't make any sense.
Well, at least we've established who the fourth best team is, and it gets Tottenham into the Champions League next season.
Off.
Sorry?
Off.
Off,
I
yes.
Said, off.
Well, they're off, qualified.
We'll see about that, won't we?
Well, the thing is, somebody I know is a Tottenham supporter, and already he's getting jittery. Like, as far as he's concerned, they're in danger of being eliminated in the first round, and for all we know, they may well be anyway. So it does make you sort of wonder, you know, how much do you really want this? Are you really going to make a go of this now you're in the, you know, you've got Harry Redknapp, who, as far as he's concerned, thinks he's done enough to earn himself a knighthood, I think, by, you know, this is better than any cup final, etc. We've heard him sort of spouting over the last few days. And again,
2 points when I arrived, 2 points from 8 games.
But as we were saying just before we came on air, I mean, it looks like Tottenham are going to get a fairly decent team when they do enter the Champions League. Could be somebody like Lyon or Werder Bremen. What do you reckon the chances, Terry? How far can you see them going?
Well, I think that they could probably make a fairly good fist of it if they get into the group stage. Mm. But I think that that's still a fairly big if, because, yeah, the non-champions route that they take, all the champions from the, shall we say, weaker leagues, say in Eastern Europe, they get sort of like compartmentalised. It's under Platini's new rules. And this idea was, and we saw, you know, sort of some teams come through as a result of that. Mm. And so what it leaves is you've got the non-champions route, which is usually made up of runners-up from the stronger leagues.
Yes.
So these are actually very strong teams. I mean, Arsenal played Celtic.
Yeah.
When they played in, and that was a tough encounter, and Arsenal and had all to manner play of well to get past. And there was, yes, we all remember the hoo-ha as well. You know, all the, you know, the was it Eduardo and all that, and the diving and all of that, or not diving, or what have you. So these are really, really tense, unpleasant encounters, and I'm worried. I'm not worried at all. I'm concerned for Tottenham fans that their lack of European experience over recent years is going to go against them. And if they are unlucky enough to, say, get drawn against Lyon, which is likely, then I would say no, they won't make it through. They'll have a terrible
Terry,
season.
Terry, I mean, like how can you say they've got a lack of European experience? They've been qualifying for the UEFA Cup and repeatedly over the last few years.
You're
Are you saying that they didn't take that competition seriously?
Well, you're absolutely right. That's a good point. And as long as Tottenham field their reserve team in the Champions League, then they've got the experience they might need to get themselves through. But, but I mean, as you well know, Graham, their tendency is to look at the UEFA Cup, the Europa League, as a secondary competition. And this is where English clubs can fall down when they finally do make it into the Champions League, is that they don't have that necessary sort of pedigree in recent years because they've not been treating the UEFA Cup with the kind of respect that Fulham have been treating it with, for instance. So I think that if they can overcome that hurdle, and they're a good side, there's no reason why they shouldn't, but I don't think it's quite a done deal, and I certainly don't think there's any cause for dousing your manager with ice buckets, frankly. This is not, you know, they've won nothing. They've finished fourth, and they've got a crack at getting into the Champions League, and that's it. And, you know, the way that they're carrying on, you know, you'd think that they'd, you know, just done a deal with Nick Clegg and were about to enter number 10. It's ridiculous. Well, satire for you there. Very topical.
Well, I mean, it goes without saying that that Tottenham have far exceeded their expectations going into this season, given their relative mediocrity, dare I say, in recent times. And to finish fourth is a really good thing. In that kind of second strata, if you will, in the Premier League, behind your sort of Chelsea's and Man U's and Arsenal's, but yes, the possibility may get carried away, and if they get, as you say, one of the stronger teams in Europe, they may be in a bit of trouble. But what of Liverpool? Liverpool finished seventh. Good grief, that's just nightmare for them, and they even finished below Aston Villa. I mean, that's the sign of a bad season, isn't it? I'm going to get complaints now from Chris Knee. And Man City were fifth, as we see in the table there. So they will be in the old Europa League. That has implications, I guess, with regards to Man City in terms of trying to lure new players for next season. Had they obviously finished fourth, then they could have used that as a sort of carrot which to buy perhaps people like Fernando Torres, so it's been said. What do you reckon on Man City in the Europa League next season, Graham?
Well, I think they'll do well. I think they'll go for it as well. They've got a big enough squad to do that. I mean, if they play their bit part players, they'll certainly have enough talent out there to do well in the contest. But yeah, you're right. I mean, if they'd made it to the Champions League, I would have been a lot more wary of Man City next season, because I think they would have gone and spent big and spent well. They had the carrot of Champions League football to wave at at Europeans football's finest talent out there, and especially with the World Cup, they would have sent Gary Cook out there with his big checkbook and hopefully come back with a few gems. As it is, you don't know who they're going to attract this summer, but obviously they'll be spending big, but they may not get the names that they want.
And it seems. Sorry, go on, Terry.
Well, I was just thinking, I think that this might actually be a good thing in a way for Man City, because it will force them to, you know, to take a more incremental approach to their development.
Yeah, pace themselves.
If they qualified for the Champions League, then I think Graham's right. Remember, oftentimes, you know, players that star in World Cups tend not to have great seasons afterwards.
No.
And you can see City going out there, signing up all the players that have really, really good tournaments, and then them coming back and then struggling to assimilate them and struggling to get a settled team. That's going to be, that's nothing really to stop them from doing that, because they've got a blank checkbook. But I mean, I think that without that lure of the Champions League, then that may well curb some of their more excessive instincts within the transfer market and allow them to perhaps take a more balanced approach. I mean, I'm saying that I'm not giving any credit whatsoever to Mancini, who may well, you know, take a very balanced approach to the whole thing and say, well, look, let's not go mad. But I'm certain that he'll be under a lot of pressure to spend big in the summer. Mm. And I'm not certain that that's entirely necessary. I mean, maybe, one, you know, maybe, but, you know, not big, not kind of Real Madrid big.
No.
And on the subject of Man City spending money and buying new players, what do you make of the news that's emerged in the last few hours as we speak, as we're recording this on Monday evening, Terry, that looks like Man City may be about to snap up Hamburg's Jerome Boateng?
Well, that's been on the cards for a little while. Hmm. So, I mean, I don't really rate Boateng that high. He's quite young and he's prone to making mistakes.
Fitting at Man City pretty well then.
Yeah. I mean, am I being unkind enough to compare with Micah Richards? Yes, what the hell. I think I will be unkind enough to compare him with Micah Richards. I'm not certain that he's really what City need. But I mean, he certainly will develop into a fine, very solid player. But I mean, I would have thought that the best move for Boateng would have been to have moved to another German club. But that isn't going to happen, so he's going to have to take his chances in the circus that is Manchester City. So, I mean, good for Boateng, but I'm not sure that it's the best move ahead of a World Cup, I have to say.
And that could be in excess of sort of £10 million that Hamburg could spend on a new player. Just give us a quick insight on how sort of Hamburg's season's been and whether and you know what they could do with £11 million. Or that's £11 million that's been purported anyway.
Well, I think Hamburg would probably do with replacing Boateng for starters, but they could probably do that within the Bundesliga, probably only a small fraction of the cost. They may, I think it depends on who they get in as their coach. That's the absolutely key thing. If they get a coach in who's a showboater and likes to sign headliners, then they may well go looking for another big sort of like money striker to play with Petrić and Van Nistelrooy. But if they go for someone with a little bit more pragmatic, then hopefully, for their point of view, they'll go and for a nice spread. £11 million in the Bundesliga goes quite well. Goes some way. Transfer fees aren't quite so bonkers over there as they have been traditionally over here.
Yes.
So that they could get a nice spread of good players, and they need bolstering in every department, Hamburg, basically, because they don't have the squad depth to be able to make it through. But, I mean, they have. There's all kinds of things. I could go on for ages about what Hamburg need, and it's not just, you know, better players. They've actually got some very good players. They need focus and a good coach and tactical range and blah, blah, and all of that stuff. I could go on. You know, if I ever do a Bundesliga podcast, and, you know, I'll do a Hamburg special, I promise. But
They've got local derbies to look forward to next season as well.
They do indeed, yeah. With St. Pauli coming up, which, I mean, that's going to be that's potentially going to be an absolute car crash, to be honest with you. I don't think St. Pauli are in any state to play in the Bundesliga. They're wonderful. I love what they stand for. I don't think they're going to be terribly well equipped for the Bundesliga at all. But yeah, it will be. I'm certain that they'll beat Hamburg because Hamburg are that kind of club. They're the kind of club that would lose to a club like St. Pauli. They really get up their goats. I can really see that now. But that may be the only 3 points that St. Pauli get. I may revise that opinion over the course of the summer.
All right. Well, going back to the Premier League, we're now at the end of the season. Graham, with your reflective hat on, that would be some sort of like...
like they used to wear in Slade.
I don't know, since week one, I didn't think we'd ever get a Slade reference.
I'm going to get myself a reflective hat now.
That could become a kind of part of the football vocabulary, couldn't it, really?
Yeah, part of my reflective hat.
Yeah, with your flares on. and your star-shaped guitar. Which teams in the Premier League this season have you been impressed with in terms of maybe achieving over and above what was perhaps expected when the season started?
No one, really.
No one?
I don't think.
Sorry.
Wolves stayed up.
Yeah. They should have done, because let's face it, Burnley, Hull, and Portsmouth were rubbish, and they should have been down ages ago.
Okay.
And let's face it, if you're another team and you're in any danger of going down this season, you must be pretty bloody awful. I mean, the bottom half of the table have been full of teams that have just been basically crap. And you know you've ended up with like the top eight teams or so, made out the only seven permanent members of the Premier League, and Man City have got like, you know, just bucketfuls of money. Mm-hmm. And I think the only two clubs that like weren't skirting with any danger or have been teams like you know, Birmingham.
Well, I was going to suggest Birmingham, because I think apparently this is their highest finish since, I don't know, 1956 or something.
Yeah, but Chris, who cares? I mean, really, who cares?
I'm just trying to put a positive spin on things.
Like, you know, if someone said to you, oh, Chris, I've got tickets for Birmingham versus Stoke.
Yes, I'll get the picture. Yes,
I mean, like, you'd be, yeah, I'm going to get on the train to go and see Birmingham Stoke. No, you're not, are you?
No. When Reading stayed up, the year that they stayed up, they got a lot of friends because they there was a certain verve, a certain elan about the way they played.
Yeah.
Birmingham, unfortunately, have been a lot more workmanlike. This doesn't make them any less worthy.
But I think the thing is, it is like, you know, you've seen it from West Brom coming back up again. And, you know, you see all the people, the commentators on TV, and they're saying, well, you know, they're going to have to be a bit more pragmatic. Last time they came up, they decided they wanted to play a game that they wanted to play, and, like, they went straight back down again. They're going to have to, be like you know, knuckle down and work harder. And what, be like every other team in the bottom half of the Premiership. It's like, you know, everyone wants teams coming up to, like, just, like, you know, not play to any sort of style or garner any friends from the way you play. I mean, I think Reading did it right. I think they came up. They
made a go of it.
They put in some really good performances as well in that time. And, yeah, rightly so, they made a few friends from an unpopular club. So, you know, not with a big fan base or anything. So
it's difficult to romanticise about, you know, clubs like Wolves and Birmingham. Although it's fantastic for their supporters, but it's difficult for neutrals to celebrate their success because, you know, they are not, you know, the easiest teams to watch.
These teams have got huge fan bases as well. So they have got a good following. So you sort of think, well, you know, these teams really should be pushing up for this sort of area, you know, because they've got the resources behind them to make this a reality. You don't want to say that, you know, that the Premier League is like four teams going for the title and 16 teams avoiding relegation. But, you know, because this season, if one thing is that's tweaked it away a bit, because, like, you know, the top four haven't pulled away as far as the top three haven't pulled far away as they have done in recent years. I mean, Chelsea have won the title, you know, relatively comfortably, but they lost six times this season.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, what do you think of the argument that it has been a weak Premier League season this season? I mean, do you think that you know, the recession and the credit crunch and, you know, the malaise that's perhaps affecting clubs like Liverpool, Manchester United has, you know, has added to a sense that, and not to mention the, you know, relatively early Champions League exits, that, you know, that this is either a Premier League that's in decline or at the very least is has had a poor season. I mean, what do you think to that?
I think it's in transition more than anything. I think I think there is going to be some inevitable decline because, you know, it's reached some very high places in the last couple of seasons, isn't it?
With the
number of teams we've had in the semi-final stage of the Champions League being sort of like, you know, a good indicator, but that's not showing, as we've discussed many times, that doesn't show the strength of the league. That shows the strength of the top four.
Yeah,
and
of course.
I think if anything, the teams below the bottom four have got stronger and they've consolidated their positions, probably because it's not all been about going out and spending big amounts of money, but really just trying to consolidate squads and making them best of what they've got. And I think people have saw like what happened to Newcastle, and I think, you know, people are perhaps getting a bit more wise now about thinking, well, you know, they're but for the grace of God go us, isn't it, really?
I get the impression it's like this year the Premier League's been like a balloon where it's not a balloon that's been popped, but a balloon where someone's starting to just let the air out a little bit. It's just starting to go down.
Making a big farty noise as well.
Yes. If you like, yes, that's pretty much a good analogy. I'd go along with all of that. And I mean, one could argue that if the financial situation is having such a big impact across the Premier League, then why aren't Man City, you know, making the most of that situation? Because they have, as you said before, Terry, got a sort of blank check constantly at hand, and you'd think they'd be able to sort of snap up all kinds of different players without too much bother. I think it's just a question of everyone's trying to get the best out of their squads, as you say, and just trying to work out how to put put one foot in front of the other and make a bit of progress. But and I think even Man City have found that they've got to be a bit cautious about how they go about their business. Quite what we can expect to see next season, I'm not quite sure. But That's for another day.
Well, it doesn't matter how rich you are. You can only play 11 players at a time, can you? So,
Yes.
Yeah, well, they're not in the area at the moment where they can go up to Barcelona and say, we like your players, we're going to have them off you. Just because their players just don't want to go to Man City.
Or you could use the sort of contrary argument. They could use their money to have bought a really sort of top class international coach. I mean, all right, Mancini, yes, okay, but he's not the best going one could argue. They could have maybe used that as a starting point. I'm not sure.
I don't think that they were able to get that coach, though. That's the thing, because again, you must have the Champions League football in order to attract the top coach. I mean, the top coaches in Europe, in the world, but let's say the top coaches in Europe as we speak. Well, I mean, look no further than the Champions League finalists. It's Jose Mourinho and Louis van Gaal. Neither of those managers would go to Manchester City as things stand at the moment.
Not even for a big check.
Maybe for an enormous check. Yeah. Maybe, but I mean, they both.
But these guys aren't on their uppers, are they?
Both of them have cashed big check. They're on their uppers, mate. What do you mean?
No, they're not on their
uppers.
They've
already got the cash in the bank.
Yeah.
Well, no, exactly. Yeah, I mean, they don't need to go there for the money. So it would have to be obscene levels of money to go there. But you have to be able to, entice them with the real challenge and with the appetite to go there. And Van Gaal is now that he's established himself at Bayern, he's not going to be leaving there in a hurry, because I mean, I think he genuinely sees himself as a pioneer, as an almost like a sort of like modern day Shankly figure, where he can come in and shape a legacy of a club so that they'll be building a statue. His ego is that large. I genuinely believe that. And the same to an extent, Mourinho is slightly different, because I think he does. I don't think he's quite the legacy builder himself. I mean, he likes to come in, do a job, and he's a bit of a Red Adair of management. He comes in, does a job, and then leaves. Mm. So he might be attracted by Manchester City in the future. But of course, he desperately wants to manage Manchester United. Well, I say desperate. I don't know. I don't know the man. But you could be pretty certain that he wants Sir Alex's job. And if he goes to Manchester City, you can forget it. There's no way he's doing that. So or Liverpool for that matter. So so who do you get if you're Manchester City? Who do you? Which coach would you go for? Who's right? Absolutely at the top of his game right now. It's a difficult one to answer unless you sort of fall back on guys like Dick Advocaat or Gus Hiddink or. The usual.
Harry Redknapp, Phil obviously. Brown. I mean, he's having ice buckets thrown over him. He must have just won the Super Bowl.
Well, do you know what? I'm looking at the old clock on the wall, and I think we're rapidly running out of time for this final podcast of the domestic season. Suffice to say, it's been an interesting one. All we've got left to look forward to now is the Europa League final, the Champions League final, some playoffs, some Championship playoffs and whatnot, and then it's the World Cup. That won't be long. It's only, 32 days away? Good grief. Doesn't time fly? We will be back next for the Champions League final, which, if memory serves correctly, is on May the 22nd. And we hope to be doing something a little bit different for that, insofar as we're going to do a sort of bookend podcast for the first time. We're going to be doing a bit of pre-match chat. We're going to try and see if we can have a bit of a reflection on the first half when the half-time comes around. And then we'll speak again afterwards. And what you'll get is like a podcast recorded over three different segments, which we hope will give you an interesting kind of new angle on the whole business of podcasting on football. But fingers crossed it all works out okay. But we'll be back next for that Champions League final, Saturday, 22nd of May, Bayern versus Inter. Meantime, we're going to treat ourselves to a week or two's rest just to recharge the old batteries. But suffice to say, thank you very much indeed. Those of you that have been listening to us during the course of the season, we hope you've not been put off too much by the technical glitches and whatnot that we've had. I think we got it right in the end. Thanks for your contact and your messages and what have you. And, we hope you'll join us for the Champions League final and then the World Cup beyond that. Before we go, just to tell you all the usual stuff, do drop us a line on Twitter @SoundOfFootball. You can email us at sofpodcast soundoffootball@googlemail.com, or you can of course visit our blog site, which is soundoffootball.blogspot.com. And just today, rather belatedly, I finally found that picture you were talking about last week, Graham, the one that said, oh no, the banner that was unfurled at the Lazio and Inter match. A bit late, but it's on there now anyway, if anyone wanted to see that. As well as that, your very last call, very late, for the Socrates Football Bloggers meetup, which is going on probably in about a day or two's time when you, by the time you get to hear this, May the 12th. If you're in the London area and you're a football blogger or a podcaster, anything like that, a football writer, do come along. There's a chance to meet other like-minded people and all in a great atmosphere. And you'll be able to watch the Europa League final and have a drink and enjoy the company of people that do something similar to yourself. And the whole thing, as usual, is sponsored by Pick Live Football. Go and visit socratesmeetup.blogspot.com for all the details of that if you want to just sneak in under the wire and join us on that night. But for now, that's it. Another Premier League season over and done with. And we'll be speaking to you next for the Europa League final. Sorry, not the Europa League final, the Champions League final. Nearly got that wrong. I did get that wrong. On May the 22nd. For now, though, from myself, from Terry, and from Graham, it's goodbye.
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 And stop.
And now it's time for Soccer Jens.
Hello. He tasks me. He tasks me, and I shall have him. I'll chase him round the moons of Nibia. And round the Antares maelstrom, and round Perdition's flames before I give him up.
Chance!
Goodbye.